From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Now the final story in our series on rhinoceros poaching. So far this week, we've heard about a poaching boom fueled by demand in Southeast Asia. Their powdered horn is thought to cure everything from a hangover to cancer. We've also heard how criminal syndicates have infiltrated some of the very organizations meant to protect the last of the world's rhinoceros. Today, NPR's Gregory Warner introduces us to two radical proposals for ending the crisis.
When Duane Biggs was a child, he could see elephants and rhino outside his bedroom window. He grew up on the 6-million-acre Kruger National Park in South Africa. His dad was a scientist there. He left the park to pursue his education, undergraduate in economics, PhD in biology. And when he returned to the park in 2011, his home felt like a war zone.
Well, for example, there'd be helicopters flying overhead all the time. I remember clearly one afternoon coming back to my home and looked around and the bush was crawling with people with assault rifles from the army, from the police, and from national parks, and they were looking for poachers.
To Biggs, this firepower seemed unnecessary. You don't have to kill a rhino to take its horn. You can clip it off like a fingernail. In fact, it's made of the same stuff as fingernails, keratin.
The risk to the animals is minimal. There's little evidence of behavioral change. Essentially, vets would go in, they would dart the animal, and they would dehorn it. And thereafter, the animal gets up again and runs around the bush and continues life as normal.
The rhino is running around the bush, and in your hand is a horn of, say, 11 pounds.
That would be worth, at the current price estimates, around $250,000.
So Biggs has been going around to conferences and classrooms making this argument, that if people in Vietnam want rhino horns so badly that they'll pay for it per ounce what they're paying for gold, we cannot dream of stopping demand. The law against selling rhino horn is only helping criminals, like the prohibition against alcohol in the 1920s fueled the American mafia. So rather than let gangsters control this trade until rhino go the way of the woolly mammoth, we should legalize it, make it possible for rhino ranchers to farm the rhino, clip off their horns, and sell them without killing a single beast.
It's quite clear that for a product like rhino horn, which has ancient, persistent, and growing demand, if you try and ban the use of that product and you try and enforce that, you're going to run into the sorts of problems we have in the Kruger National Park right now.
And this argument for a legal rhino horn trade is gaining supporters in the South African government. There's a push to submit the idea for an international vote in 2016 at the big endangered wildlife conference known as CITES, which means that other countries in Africa have less than 3 years to come up with a counter-argument. The best place, I'm told, to find that counter-argument is on a little spot in Nairobi National Park in Kenya.
This place has been visited by people from all over the world.
Today, I'm visiting this spot with Winnie Kiru, a trustee of the Kenya Wildlife Service. And the two of us are looking at a brick monument, almost like a crematorium.
This monument, which commemorates the burning of 12 tons of ivory. Wow.
On this spot, the then president of Kenya, Daniel Arap Moi,
on July 18th, 1989,
set fire to 12 tons of ivory tusks confiscated from poachers.
And the idea was to send a very strong message to the world that ivory had no value.
Ivory that year was trading legally at its then highest price in history. So Kenya's symbolic burn of over $4 million of elephant tusk became like its Nancy Reagan moment. Just say no to ivory.
That a third world country was setting aside all this. It made no sense, really. It made absolutely no economic sense.
USA Today called the burn one of the conservation milestones of the 1980s, up there with finding that the ozone layer had a hole. Because if you were walking down the street and saw an African president burning money, you'd also stop and listen.
I appeal to people all over the world to stop buying ivory. For to do so will be to support the needless illegal killing of elephants.
Worldwide sales of ivory dropped. The trade was banned 3 months later. And Kenya's elephant population over the next decade came back from the brink of extinction. Now, 24 years later, there's an internal memo circulating in the halls of Kenya's government. a plan, if approved, to cut off the horns of some of Kenya's rhino and set them ablaze. This time, it would be just say no to rhino.
The only creature that has a right to a rhino horn is the rhino itself.
So, at the exact same time that the South Africans are inching toward a proposal to legalize the sale of rhino horn worldwide, the Kenyans are contemplating a symbolic act to make the horn ever more taboo. And you can't go down both paths at once. You cannot, as Winnie Kiru says, legitimize a trade and say it's wrong. For Kiru, it's clear that if rhino horn were legal, there'd be no stopping the rise in demand among the Asian nouveau riche.
Let's do the math. The whole population of white rhinos in Africa is 20,000. You can't even meet the demand in Vietnam. Forget China.
Not surprisingly, The Economist does that math very differently. Duane Biggs says that if rhino were farmed, like sheep, with their horns shorn off every year, incentivized farmers would breed more rhino while the price would go down. Eventually, it's the poachers who would be priced out of the business.
Provide a financial incentive and a benefit to the landholders that are conserving these rhino.
And underlying this whole debate about animals is a philosophical gulf about how you influence human behavior. Is it with shame or is it with profit? Because in the end, neither side really knows what would happen if you could buy a packet of rhino horn in the pharmacy, like Tylenol. Would it become more popular or lose its forbidden allure? Would the poachers go out of business or would they become more audacious because they could launder their stolen horn as legitimate? And then there's this question, would we ever be able to see a rhino in the wild again? Or if we wanted to take our kids to see the great rhinoceros, would we have to peek into guarded pens on private rhino farms? At the next CITES Conference on Endangered Species in 2016, some council of experts may be asked to decide which of these hypotheticals is closer to the truth. Gregory Warner, NPR News, Nairobi.
This is NPR News.